Hello and welcome to the Revisiting Old Favourites podcast in the Inner Sanctum, where we continue our On the Path to Rome with Hilaire Belloc, reading his book of that title. The Path to Rome, of course, is also a pilgrimage to Rome, and we've been joining Belloc on that pilgrimage now for many, many weeks, almost a year, God help us, and he has. And of course, this path to Rome, this pilgrimage to Rome, is now becoming a race to Rome, because Belloc's vow was to get to Rome in time for the to hear Mass on the feast of St. Peter and Paul on June 29th. So we only have a few weeks left to get there. Well, today we accompany Belloc as he moves into Tuscany, still up in the mountains, and the descent from the mountains. And then we also hear one of those wonderful tangential digressions on this, that, the other, on anything, and today specifically actually on youth. So that's what we have to look forward to. So without any further ado, let's continue on the path to Rome with Hilaire Belloc. When I had slept out the heat, I followed the woods upward through the afternoon. They stood tangled and huge, and the mosses under them were thick and silent, because in this last belt of the mountains, height and coolness reproduced the north. A charcoal burner was making his furnace. After that, for the last miles, there was no sound. Even the floor of the vale was a depth of grass, and no torrent rain in it, but only a little hidden stream. Leafy like our streams at home. At last, the steep bank, a wall at the end of the valley, rose immediately above me. It was very steep and bare, desolate, with the many stumps of trees that had been cut down. But all its edge and fringe against the sky was the line of a deep forest. After its laborious hundreds of feet, when the forest that crowned it evenly was reached, the Apennines were conquered. The last great range was passed, and there stood no barrier between this high crest and Rome. The hither side of that bank, I say, had been denuded of its trees. The roots of secular chestnuts stood like graves above the dry steep, and had marked my last arduous climb. Now, at the summit, the highest part was a line of cool forest, and the late afternoon mingled with the sanctity of trees. A genial dampness pervaded the earth beneath. Grasses grew, and there were living creatures in the shade. Nor was this tenanted wood all the welcome I received on my entry into Tuscany. Already I heard the noise of falling waters upon every side, where the Serchio sprang from 20 sources on the southern slope and leapt down between mosses and quarrelled and overcame great smooth dark rocks in busy falls. Indeed, it was like my own country in the north, and a man might say to himself, after so much journeying, perhaps I am in the enchanted wood and may find at last the fairy Melisande. A glade opened, and the trees no longer hiding it, I looked down the vale, which was the gate of Tuscany. There, high, jagged, wrapped into the sky, stood such a group of mountains as men dream of in good dreams, or see in the works of painters when old age permits them revelations. Their height was evident from the faint mist and grey of their hues. Their outline was tumultuous, yet balanced, full of accident and poise. It was as though these high walls of Carrara, the western boundary of the valley, had been shaped expressly for man, in order to exalt him with unexpected and fantastic shapes, and to expand his dull life with a permanent surprise. For a long time, I gazed at these great hills. Then, more silent in the mind through their influence, I went down past the speech and companionship of the springs of the Serchio, and the chestnut trees were redolent of evening all around. Down the bank to where the streams met in one, down the river, across its gaping ruinous bridge, which someone generations ago had built for the rare travellers. There were then no main roads across the Apennine, and perhaps this rude pass was in favour. Down still more gently through the narrow upper valley I went between the chestnut trees, and Calm went with me for a companion. And the love of men and the expectation of good seemed natural to all that had been made in this blessed place. Of border, where the peasants directed me, there is no need to speak. To a crossing the Serchio once more, this time on a trestle bridge of wood, I passed by a wider path through the groves and entered the dear village of Celano, which looks right into the pure west. And the peaks are guardians all about it, the elder brothers of this remote and secluded valley. An inn received me, a great kitchen full of men and women talking, a supper preparing, a great fire, meat smoking and drying in the ingle nook, a vast timbered roof going up into darkness. There I was courteously received, but no one understood my language. Seeing there a young priest, I said to him, Pater, habeo linguam latinum, sed non habeo linguam italicum, visne mi dare traductionium in istum linguam Toscanum non nullorum verborum. To this he replied, Libente, and the people revered us both. Thus he told me the name for a knife was Cultello, for a room, Camero por dormere, for what is it called, come si chiama, for what is the road to, quella a e la via a, and other phrases wherein no doubt I am wrong, but I only learnt by ear. Then he said to me something I did not understand, and I answered, Paul Ecle, at which he seemed pleased enough. Then, to make conversation, I said, Diaconus S. And he answered me, mildly and gravely, Presbyter sum. And a little while after, he left for his house, but I went out onto the balcony, where men and women were talking in subdued tones. There, alone, I sat and watched the night coming up into these Tuscan hills. The first moon since that waning in Lorraine. How many nights ago, how many marches! Hung in the sky, a full crescent growing into brightness and glory as she assumed her reign. The one star of the west called out his silent companions in their order. The mountains merged into a fainter confusion. Heaven and the infinite air became the natural seat of any spirit that watched this spell. The fireflies darted in the depths of vineyards and of trees below. Then the noise of the grasshoppers brought back suddenly the gardens of home, and whatever benediction surrounds our childhood, some promise of eternal pleasures and of rest deserved haunted the village of Celano. Quick parenthesis. That was absolutely sublime, beautiful, English, mystical, poetic. Beauty is the promise of the beatific vision. Anyway, I will now desist. Close parenthesis. In very early youth, the soul can still remember its immortal habitation, and clouds and the edges of hills are of another kind from ours, and every scent and colour has a savour of paradise. What that quality may be, no language can tell, nor have men made any words, no, nor any music to recall it. Only in a transient way and elusive the recollection of what youth was and purity flashes on us in phrases of the poets and is gone before we can fix it in our minds. Oh, my friends, we could but recall it. Whatever those sounds may be that are beyond our sounds, and whatever are those keen lives which remained alive there under memory, Whatever is youth, youth came up that valley at evening, born upon a southern air. If we deserve or attain beatitude, such things shall at last be our settled state, and their now sudden influence upon the soul in short ecstasies is the proof that they stand outside time and are not subject to decay. This, then, was the blessing of Celano, and here was perhaps the highest moment of those even 100 miles or more. Of those 700 miles or more. Do not, therefore, be astonished, reader, if I now press on much more hurriedly to Rome, for the goal is almost between my hands, and the chief moment has been enjoyed until I shall see the city. Now I cry out and deplore me that this next 60 miles of way, but especially the heat of the days and the dank mists of the night, should have to be told as of a real journey in this very repetitive and sui similar world. How much rather I wish that being free from mundane and wide awake, that is to say from perilously dusty considerations and droughty boredoms, I might wander forth at leisure through the air and visit the regions where everything is as the soul chooses, to be dropped at last in the ancient and famous town of Siena, whence comes that kind of common brown paint wherewith men, however wicked, can produce, if they have but the art, very surprising effects of depth in painting. For so I read of it in a book by a fool at 6 shillings, and even that was part of a series. But if you wish to know anything further of the matter, go you and read it, for I will do nothing of the kind. Oh, to be free for strange voyages, even for a little while. I am tired of the road, and so are you. That's more blame to you. Your father's also tired of the treadmill, and mine of the conquering marches of the Republic. Heaven bless you all. But I say that if it were not for the incredulity and doubt and agnosticos, his schismatical hesitation, and very cumbersome air of questioning and peering about, which is the bane of our moderns, very certainly I should now go on to tell of giants as big as cedars, living in mountains of precious stones, and drawn to battle by dragons in cars of gold, or of towns where the customs of men were remote and unexpected, of countries not yet visited, and of the gods returning. For though it is permissible, and a pleasant thing, as Bacon says, to mix a little falsehood with one's truth, to St. Louis, St. Louis mixed water with his wine, and so does Sir John Growl mix vinegar with his, unless I am greatly mistaken, for if not, how does he give it that taste at his dinners, eh? There, I think, is a question that would puzzle him. Yet, is it much more delectable, and far worthier of the immortal spirit of man, to soar into the empyrean of pure lying, that is, to lay the bridle on the neck of Pegasus and let him go forward, while in the saddle, meanwhile, one sits well back, grips with the knee, takes the race, and on the energy of that steed, visits the wheeling stars. So there, leaving Belloc waxing lyrical, in more ways than one, on more things than one, we'll leave him, and we'll take up the path again, 60 or so miles to go to the Eternal City. So please do join me next week as we continue on the path to Rome, the pilgrimage to Rome, and the race to Rome with Hilaire Belloc. Until then, thanks for joining me, and goodbye, and God bless.